Well, there are a number of persons who are here who were not with us yesterday evening. So I'll just summarize what we discussed yesterday evening. Before I discuss what we discussed yesterday evening, just some appreciation of Queen Kunti. That's what we, how we started. Our young devotees, these two awesome fellows over here, had something nice to say about Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti, first we heard, she's the mother of the Pandavas, and she's the sister of Vasudev, who is the father of Krishna. So she's Krishna's aunt. And the Pandavas, they're pure devotees of Krishna. And wherever Krishna appears, performing his earthly pastimes, they're with him. Especially Arjuna is spoken of regularly in that way. Very, very dear to Krishna, and she's the mother of one who is very dear to Krishna. And Queen Kunti, she was called the queen because her husband Pandu was the king. And then following Pandu being king and a whole lot of intrigue, she became then the mother of the king. So she still held the title Queen Kunti. And very, 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 very special was her devotion for Krishna. Very exalted devotee of Krishna. And because of that devotion for Krishna, she was able to understand truths about Krishna that even great philosophers and yogis and rishis and mystics were unable to understand about Krishna, because these truths were revealed through the medium of her devotion to Krishna. So the scene, as depicted in the painting, is after the battle of Kurukshetra was completed and Yudhishthira became the king, the purpose for Krishna coming to Hastinapur from Dwarka was completed. So Krishna is now going back to Dwarka. And the painting shows there's Krishna's on his chariot in the courtyard of the palace, and throngs of so many people were there to say farewell to Krishna. And having royal privileges, Kunti worked her way through the crowd and came before the chariot, appealing to Krishna, please don't go. But she's a very cultured person, so she didn't just say, Krishna, please don't go. She said so many things. And the prayers constitute those so many things. Those prayers of Queen Kunti are very much loved in the whole of Vedic lore, in part because of the mood of love with which she expresses herself and the truths about Krishna that she reveals as she's offering these prayers to Krishna. Outstanding, we discussed, is the humility in the beginning, in the middle, in the end, and at every step, just humiliatingly humble. Powerfully humble, compellingly humble, again and again and again, consistent, although she's such an exalted position in her relationship with Krishna. She saw Krishna, her prayers indicate that she saw him as the super soul, which is very interesting, because we know theoretically that super soul is in the heart of every living entity, and maybe an advanced yogi can, in trance of meditation, see the super soul within his heart. But Kunti was seeing the super soul before her as her nephew, walking around amongst everybody. And so she expressed her amazement and bewilderment about this feature of Krishna. And so she revealed many, many, many things, but the verses we discussed yesterday evening, two verses, the sense of Krishna's protection. Now, some of you may be attending, hopefully most of you will be attending, the Festival of the Holy Name that we'll be conducting in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend. And the theme of that Festival of the Holy Name is entering into the Holy Name through the medium of surrender. So it starts with humility. We're going to be discussing songs of one great Acharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, explaining how to enter into the mood of surrender to Krishna, specifically through his holy name. And it starts with humility, just as Queen Kunti's prayers. But one of the angas or the limbs of surrender is feeling Krishna's protection. And these two prayers we discussed yesterday were powerful exhibitions of Kunti's complete confidence in Krishna's protection. Those two prayers, she speaks first of Vasudev and then Devaki, that she and Devaki were put into difficulty. But special mercy was shown to her because she was husbandless. Now Krishna also protected Devaki and released her from the prison of Kamsa. But at the same time, Krishna sanctioned that Kamsa killed the first six children of Krishna, of Devaki. So she was puzzled by that. But she understood, although I'm less fortunate than Devaki, you showed greater mercy to me. And with expressions of humility. I'm unqualified, yet you showed such mercy to me. I am your surrendered servant. And then the second verse that we discussed was she listed ways in which difficulties were placed upon her and the Pandavas, one after the next, after the next, after the next, a series of vipada, or calamities. And Krishna saved them from those calamities. And we're going to hear something about that also during the 4th of July weekend event in Chicago. Perhaps it's one of the most famous parts of her prayers where she prays for calamities to come again and again. So we're going to hear that this evening. So that's where we're going to pick up. We'll start with this nice prayer. We'll say it together. Hey Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. This is a prayer to Krishna. Oh, my dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So just a little summary. These are prayers that were covered before, 18 through 24. The themes mentioned already. Amazing humility exhibited by Kunti in her prayers. Her very clear understanding of the distinction between bhakti as a process for knowing the absolute truth and gyan as a process for knowing the absolute truth. And do we need a screwdriver or something? Is there a screwdriver in the house? You got one? She's from the bhakti side, and she expresses how persons who are jnanis as elevated as they are in so many ways, they're unable to understand Krishna. So how can I, a mere woman, not a great intellectual, how is it possible I'm going to understand Krishna? But she understands Krishna better than the Jnanis do because of the process of bhakti. It permits understanding of Krishna because of Krishna's special mercy that goes to his devotee. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that. You know what the verse is? Bhaktyamam avijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. One can understand Krishna tatvataha in truth through the medium of devotional service. So she describes this very nicely. Bhakti is super excellent, and the fruits of bhakti yield far more comprehensive, complete understanding of Krishna than the Gyan process. This is just review, but there's some verses where she speaks that Krishna is hidden by the curtain of Maya, and therefore there's inconceivable features of Krishna because he's beyond our senses to perceive, beyond our reason to understand. He's inconceivable. And instead we see the curtain of Maya. Several verses discussing this. And the position of protection that Krishna extends to those who take shelter of him. And a big theme woven again and again is the apparent contradictory features that Krishna exhibits. We discussed this. But because he's the absolute truth, because he's the source of everything, everything exists within him. So he may exhibit this and he may exhibit that, but it's all within him. So he is the reconciling factor of apparent contradictory features. So now we're going to go to the next set of the prayers, starting with text 25. And here's the verse. Again, this word vipada. Vipada means calamities, this famous one that everybody seems to know about, Queen Kunti asking for calamities. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Famous. So this word vipada means calamities. And she's asking for calamities. In this world, there's a place where you don't have to ask for calamities. They come. Everyone's noticed. We don't ask for calamities, but it comes. Because it's a place of duality. Sometimes there's good fortune, sometimes there's ill fortune. Sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's hot. Sometimes it's light, sometimes it's dark. Sometimes it's wet, sometimes it's dry. Sometimes this, sometimes that. It's a place of duality. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this world is created as a place of dukkha. It's designed that way. Prabhupada explains just like a prison house. Not meant to be comfortable. It's uncomfortable. By design. So that's what this place is. It's the place of Maya Devi or Durga Devi or a prison house. Durga, that's what it literally means. So, and she's in charge and she doesn't let people out very easily. So where we're in a place where there's danger at every step, do we have a tablet that has this verse? Somebody has a little device. 1825. Technology's nice sometimes. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities worship or begin to worship the Lord. That's a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Chatravidhava jante mam. Jana sukritunarjana. Those who are sukriti, those who are pious, they may take shelter of the Supreme Lord, prompted by one of these four things. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. It's covered by the curtain of Maya. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. Now, this is the only purport out of all of these prayers that I decided to read because the verse is so important and the message is so important and Kunti is so important. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nations, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hooves of a calf. This is, again, paraphrasing a verse from the Bhagavatam that says this material existence is compared to an ocean of misery. And to cross the ocean of misery is very difficult because it's oceanic. But if one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, that water shrinks to the amount of water in the hoof print of a calf. It's still something, some water in the hoof print of a calf, but easy to step over or jump over, easy to cross over by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then, this material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place, dukkhalayam, full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. That's a travel advertisement. Come on over here, no calamities. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. He gives an example. In a dream, a man may see a tiger swallowing him, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there's no tiger, and there's no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the nine devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. So as we're walking along the path of life, like this graphic here, We're not sure what to expect, but we know there's going to be some calamities. And when they come, pious people take shelter. In Kunti's case, well, just here's the situation. From Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's a passage. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a commentary by Sanatana Goswami on Srimad Bhagavatam. And in one of the two parts, there's a elaborate description of Narada Muni going on a quest for finding out who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. That's a nice question to ask. So he goes from person to person to person, and each of the persons he approaches says, no, no, no. They're humble. No, no, no. Not me. Here's my disqualification. But if you want to know who's really qualified, there is such and such person, very, very qualified. And so Narada goes to that person and sees how qualified they are and says, you are the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy for these reasons. And they say, no, no, no. You don't understand. I'm not at all receiving Krishna's mercy. These are my disqualifications. But if you want to know who is, so he goes through that procedure again and again and again, again and again. It's like an ascending process from earth to higher positions on earth to the heavenly planets. And after even going to, anyway, goes very, very elevated places, he's sent to Prahlad Maharaj, who says, I'm in this position of neutrality. I just remember the Lord. But Hanuman, he's always serving the Lord. So he goes to Hanuman. Oh, you're the greatest. No, no, no. Ramchandra left me. He took 60,000 of his devotees and told me to stay here. How can you say I'm the greatest recipient? But the Pandavas, they're always in Krishna's association. They're the greatest recipients. Go find the Pandavas. So Narada goes to the Pandavas, and when he reaches the capital, they're having a Pandava conference, making a plan of what the next calamity should be. Because they know when there's a calamity, Krishna comes. So calamities are just fine. Why? Kunti says in her prayer, because Krishna comes, and when you see Krishna, your cycle of birth and death is finished. No more calamities. You go to that abode where it's calamity-free, Vaikuntha. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. These dangers, Kunti's thinking, are a great blessing to me. Oh, Guru of the universe, to give benefit to us, you destroy unsteadiness caused by intoxication with material comfort by giving the ointment of dangers, vipada, arising out of your mercy. Through those dangers, we can see you. By seeing you, we no longer see the sufferings of material existence. Nice. Like the dream, the tiger. Then there's two verses that have similar Sanskrit term, this term akinchana. So that's Queen Kunti. She's describing others, but actually she's describing herself. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shribhir Edamana Badakpuman Nai Vair Hatya Dhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. My Lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. The painting on the right is Sanatan and Rupa Goswami, who were at the top of the mountain of material prosperity. Wealth, position, education, fame, all, they were the prime minister and the home minister of practically a third of India today in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah, and they left it. Chaktvaturnam Ashesham Mandala Pati Shanim Sada Turchavat. It said that they were in this highly revered aristocratic position. They just left it to come to this position of living in Vrindavan as mendicants. So they were materially exhausted. Materially exhausted meaning the wealth that they had no meaning for them. So it's not necessary that you become a renunciate. It's necessary that the hope for happiness in attaining objects of the senses isn't something that you're pursuing. That's necessary for bhakti to arise in the heart. So along with humility, this position of detachment. Now, built into this is a little description of pravritti and nivritti. Are you familiar with those terms? Pravritti means the path of progressive material prosperity. Progressively accumulating more and more stuff, or opulence, or paraphernalia, or prestige, or knowledge, or things of this world. Because a large part of the Vedas have that as their purpose. By performing of Vedic rituals and sacrifices and processes, one increases piety. Through that piety, one gets the fruits of piety. And these four are mentioned: Janma, high parentage; Aishwarya, great opulence; Shruta, good education; and Shri, beauty. These are fruits of piety. So many persons, not only in India, followers of the Vedas, but all over the world, their interest in religion is to increase piety so they can prosper in this life and go to heaven in the next life. It's universal. It's not modern, not ancient, it's universal. And that's this pravritti. So Queen Kunti is an advocate, as is the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, an advocate of nivritti. And nivritti means progressively, as one increases in devotion, one feels satisfaction within. And by that satisfaction within, one isn't looking for happiness outside, but you're happy within. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. He says that it's very difficult, it's a big struggle, to give up objects of the senses. In fact, if one does so while coveting in the mind attraction for those objects of the senses, then it's false renunciation. It's pretense. But when there's a happiness within, then it's very easy to do without those things. Just paraphrasing a verse from Bhagavad Gita. So Kunti's there, and she understands that the distinction between this elevation through material prosperity or progressively diminishing one's involvement with the material energy by increasing one's shelter in Krishna and spiritual energy. Because when one has that aspiration for pravritti, they can't feelingly take shelter of the personality of Godhead. It blocks. So humility has its opposite, that's pride. Pride blocks the heart. But also hankering for material prosperity blocks the heart from devotion, or feelingly taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. Here's the Sanskrit terms, edamana madakpuman. Edamana means progressively increasing. Mada, it means mad, or intoxication with the aspiration for increasing material involvement. So here are these two terms, pravritti and nivritti. the path of sense enjoyment, the path of renunciation. So here are the images that just took off the website. Respectable parentage. So one may want kingly position of birth, or one may want great wealth. Because if you get wealth, then you can buy things. And then if you buy things, you can be happy. Some people think. Or high education to get the good job so you can get the good wealth so you can get the enjoyment. And in the world, since beginning of time, learned people, people who are very vastly learned and wise, that's revered in society. That's the fruit of piety. And bodily beauty. I had trouble finding a good image for bodily beauty. So I came up with this one. Nefertiti is an Egyptian queen that's notoriously or has some reputation of being an emblem of beauty. So bodily beauty is also a fruit of piety. However, the teaching of Kunti says that one who is looking for happiness in these things and pursuing piety to get those things, there's no real shelter there. It's not a position of real happiness. It's actually a detriment or even an impediment for spiritual progress, and for that means real happiness. It's an allurement that takes one's attention away from the position of real happiness. So one who's seeking happiness in those things or in the activities that bring those things, one cannot feelingly offer prayers to the personality of Godhead. And this word abhidhatum means calling the names of the Supreme Lord. Abhidhatum vai. Tvam akinchana gocharam. Akinchana gocharam. So the next verse has the same word akinchana in it, but here it's akinchana vitaya. Akinchana vitaya. Namo akinchana vitaya nivritta guna vrittaye atmaramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha. Even the alliteration, the literary ornament of consonant sounds being repeated is there in her verses. It's very nice. Kunti prays, My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master of the monists. So I've... Where's the light? This one, okay. Okay. This Kaivalya Pataye, I've highlighted in this purple color down here, the master of the monists. Because the monists, they're also at least striving, if not detached from material objects. Kaivalya Pataye. But Krishna is the pati of those Kaivalya folks, those that are striving for detachment from this world. Prabhupada writes in his purport, very first line, a living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. So, there's I and mine. As soon as you have I, you know, self-identity, there's mine. That's what you possess. So we have a body, a gross and a subtle body. So what are you going to do? Get out a potato peeler and peel off your body. You cease to exist if you don't have something to possess. Then in a higher sense, they want bananas. We'll try to get to prasadam pretty soon. Okay. There's a higher sense that says, what do we possess? We know from Ishopanishad, the one that possesses everything is Isha, the Lord. Because he's the source of everything, he is the proprietor of everything. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, what Prabhupada calls the peace formula, the last verse of chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, it's one of the necessary things to understand to become peaceful. That is, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suradam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati. You know the verse. So, Krishna is the proprietor of everything because he is the source of everything. So when we enter this world, we own nothing. And when we leave the world, we own nothing. And foolishly, in between, we're trying to make so many things ours. So the goal is not just to give things up. That's what's being said here. You can't just give things up because they don't belong to you to give up. Supposing I go for a walk, jump a walk outside, and I see a Mercedes-Benz. Maybe a BMW. Maybe a Rolls-Royce. Maybe a some other fancy name. And I go, I renounce it. What's the meaning of that? It's not mine to renounce. Just a little anecdotal sharing. Somehow or another, Premananda has an ability to attract people from university or school groups to come to the temple. I don't know if you're aware of this, but groups come on a regular basis. And I've done this same kind of thing because it's just curiosity. They're not really going to do anything with what they hear or see. It's just, you know, it's like an eighth grade scientist and they show you what a monarch butterfly is. They put one on a board and see all those spots and they've got their little antlers and they got their... We're like that. It's like a specimen on a board and checking out what the Krishna guys are. But anyway, they're hearing something about Krishna, so there's benefit. They get prasadam. Some people take a book. And they think, oh, the Krishna people are nice. So that's good. That's good. So one of the common questions at the end, you know, it's a 101 class. We just say who we are, what we're doing, and the holy name, and Bhagavad Gita, and reincarnation, and the soul's eternal, and, you know, some basic things. So at the end, they ask the four or five common questions, very high-level questions. What's the mark on your forehead? Why do you shave your head? What's the meaning of the color of the clothes that you wear? And then another question they ask is, from a Christian language background, in order to become a part of this organization, do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions? You've heard that phrase before? It's what people do when they become monks. Legally, it's called the vow of poverty. When I turned 65, I went for Medicare. And that was one of the questions, have you taken a vow of poverty? So they asked the same question in these high school and college groups. In order to become a member of this organization, do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions? And my answer is no. But you do have to renounce the misconception that you have worldly possessions to surrender or to renounce. Because everything belongs to Krishna. So that's this message. A living entity cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. The real renouncer, in Rupa Goswami's teachings, is one who recognizes the relationship of things with Hari and they use those things in service to Hari. It's like offering a palm full of Ganges to the Ganges. What does the Ganges need with a palm full of Ganges? Nothing. It came from the Ganges. It's hers. But it's the offering that's important, and with bhakti, it's the offering that's important. It's recognizing the proprietor, and we're offering to the proprietor. That's the bhakti message. So her teaching is even for these Kaivalya folks, those that try to renounce things, the monists. Krishna is the pati of the monists. He's the master of the monists. He's the one that's giving them whatever it is that they have. And in contrast, for a devotee, there's a painting of Maharaj Yudhishthir next to Draupadi, and Bhima in the front with a big club, and Arjuna doesn't have his bow. Nukula Sahadev. This is from the Bhagavatam. When Maharaj Yudhishthir was ruling his kingdom with the help of Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the opulence of his kingdom surpassed all imaginations of the opulence of the kingdom of heaven. Now, he didn't become a Kaivalya fellow. He had all opulence. He was using all that opulence in service to Krishna. Doesn't require giving up your worldly possessions, recognizing rather that those possessions are for Krishna's service. Similarly, Maharaj Ambarish, 9th canto Bhagavatam, he achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity. It's said for him, equal to and even surpassing the prosperity in Vaikuntha realm. He was a Vaikuntha Vasi, or a Vaikuntha Bhakta. Great, great opulence, but totally detached. Totally detached. It's said in the verse by Shukadev, he saw all that opulence as no more meaningful than a pebble in the street. Supposing, you know, when we're going home, going looking for our shoes, and instead we see a pebble. We're going to get excited. Oh, look at that. You don't even pay attention. It says, where's my shoes? The opulence of Maharaj Ambarish and the opulence of Yudhishthir Maharaj and the opulence of whatever devotee that's pure in devotion, it's inconsequential. Can be used in Krishna's service? Fine. That's the shelter, the place of happiness, or the sign that now I'm successful in life because now I have some opulence. No. Rather, these things are not wanted, according to Queen Kunti. Prabhupada writes, by diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, the prime necessity of human life. Rather, one should take shelter of the holy name. The best means of spiritual realization is chanting of the holy name. So one of the offenses against the chanting of the holy name is number 10 in the list. Maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions in this matter. It doesn't mean you have to give up your property. Empty your bank balance, turn your piggy back upside down, and walk away. You don't find shelter or attachment in those things. You use those things. It's a very, very different consciousness. It's tricky because when we start using things, we get attached to those things. Very easily. Including our shoes. Or whatever it is. We use things in Krishna's service without attachment. Anasaktasya Vishayan is the words of Rupa Goswami. Anasaktasya, without attachment. Vishayan, sense enjoyment. Without attachment to enjoying the objects. Yatarham upayunjitaha. According to suitability, we use them. Prabhupada writes, the material disease is due to hankering after and lording it over material nature. This hankering is due to the interaction of the three modes of nature. So one fellow thinks he's the enjoyer because I'm the boss. The other fellow is, I'm an enjoyer because I have a good job. I got a living. I can take care of my family. And whether it's the this one or that one, they're under the influence of the modes of nature. And that hankering for enjoyment keeps them in bondage. And neither the Lord nor the devotee have attachment for such false enjoyment. That's the teaching of Queen Kunti. Because we want to feelingly take shelter of the Supreme Lord, feelingly call His holy name. Just a couple slides and we're done. This is Vishwanath, his translation or paraphrase of the verse, Kunti's saying, I offer my respects to He whose treasure is unalloyed devotees, who is devoid of material interest, who is disinterested in those who are not devotees, who forgives His devotees, and who helps the devotee desiring liberation. So this is his commentary. Those who do not have anything materially speaking, akinchana, but possess only you, who have a body of complete knowledge and bliss, are alone your unalloyed devotees. They are the abodes of prema and are thus like treasures who should be hidden from everyone. I offer respects to you who possess these treasures of the akinchanas. But akinchanas are poor. That's true. The devotees of the Lord do not have the wealth arising from the gunas of maya. They have the Lord, who is devoid of all material enjoyment. Nivritta guna vrittaye. The Lord's attachment to the akinchana bhaktas was described now as detachment from others as shown. Atmaramaya. If the devotee makes offense to the Lord does not become angry, he remains peaceful. Shantaya, showing mercy to his devotee. He also assists those devotees interested in liberation. Kaivalya Pataye. So the message of summary. The message of bhakti includes a message of detachment. Not artificial, not the give it up kind of detachment, but losing interest in those things. There may be some giving up, voluntary giving up. But the spirit of that giving up is there's something full inside, the fullness of the sense of a relationship with Krishna. There's does anybody not know who is Lord Chaitanya? Anybody so new they don't know who is Lord Chaitanya? Lord Chaitanya established the chanting of the holy name, the Sankirtan process. So for some time he resided, for 24 years, he resided in Jagannath Puri. While he was in Jagannath Puri, he had association with the chief priest of the king. The chief priest of the king was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a super scholar, but he wasn't a devotee. He was the Gyani, super scholar. Through association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became a devotee. It's a long story. Another evening we'll tell that story. But he became a devotee. And because he was super scholar, he wrote 100 verses, spontaneously composed verses, glorifying Lord Chaitanya. And one of them still remains today as a very famous, well-known verse that begins, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshartam Ekam Purushak Puranam. So the first part, first line, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Lord Chaitanya taught Bhakti Yoga assisted by knowledge and detachment. Just as the Bhagavatam teaches, some of you are familiar with the following verse from Bhagavatam. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Jani Atyashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Ahaitukam means causelessly. Causelessly, Jnana and Vairagya arise. Just like when there's fire. There's heat and there's light. There are qualities of fire, heat and light. Where devotion is there, knowledge and detachment are there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give bhakti from which knowledge and detachment arise. Exactly as the Bhagavatam teaches, Lord Chaitanya did. So detachment is a natural feature of devotion. The opposite is one who is holding on very tightly to the expectation of happiness from contacting sense objects. One isn't going to progress in bhakti. There has to be some willingness to let go. Prabhupada gave this example. Supposing there's a child that has something in their hand that's dangerous. And the mother sees that something that's dangerous in their hand. They try to take that something from the child's hand. What's going to happen? The child's going to scream. They'll hold on to it all the more. Prabhupada said, but if you take something that rattles or glitters and hold it in front of them, they drop the thing that's in their hand and grab the glittery, rattly thing. Mothers are very smart. Similarly, Prabhupada's explanation, we're holding on very tightly to that which is a source of misery. And it's blocking the natural happiness. It's double. Double whammy. Double jeopardy. So, to let go of that, the attachment, to let go, it's nourished by the happiness of bhakti. But there has to be some willingness to let go. Conversely, if one just holds on, is unwilling to let go, the position of really real happiness will never be experienced. Fortunately, Krishna is very kind, and he sometimes gives this overwhelming experience of happiness, even for a neophyte, that's just like, wow, I never knew that kind of happiness existed, so let me go for it. Nectar of Devotion says like that. Sometimes Krishna just shows some special mercy to a neophyte to encourage them to go further. And if we carefully cultivate the bhakti process, we'll understand more deeply the necessity of letting go and going further. Letting go of the material contamination specifically. Not letting go of, you know, your free will and your power of discrimination and things like that. Not blindly becoming a sentimentalist. But attachment to the sources of misery, let them go. On the strength of bhakti. So this is part of Kunti's teachings. She's not presenting it like other portions of the Bhagavatam do. It's intense, rigorous philosophy. And some people like that intense, rigorous philosophy. It has its place too. She's just expressing from her heart. In such a beautiful way. Her appreciation goes to Krishna. We're going to hear some more about this over the festival of the Holy Name. The impetus for surrender to Krishna is appreciation of him. And the more you get to know him, the more you love him. And the more you love him, the more the detachment from the temporary comes. So hearing about Krishna from one who knows Krishna, that's Kunti, enhances our attraction for Krishna and helps us on our path to the position of pure devotion. So it's nice to read her prayers and hear them again and again and enter deeply into the mood of devotion that Kunti has. She's feeling deep, deep feelings for Krishna. And she understands this other is an obstacle. Any comments or questions? Time to check your email. Anything? Yes.
This might be just a logical thing in my head. I'm getting confused by the slide where you had a picture of the renunciated long.
Yeah.
So it says, a living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess.
Yeah. Okay. Keep speaking.
Which I think means that we have to possess something.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, on the other hand, say that a living being cannot be in the real sense of the term a renouncer. Like, I thought the idea was that we don't possess anything to renounce anyways. But then we're saying that...
Okay, I gotcha. The apparent contradiction. We have nothing to possess, so how can we not exist if we don't have something to possess? So that sense of there's nothing for us to possess means independent. Just like the first verse of Ishopanishad. Isavasham idam sarvam. So the Supreme Lord is actually the proprietor of everything. But we have something as our quota. So something, for example, something that can never be taken from us is our free will. Because we're part and parcel of the Supreme. That's intrinsically ours. Or our relationship with Krishna is intrinsically ours. It can't be taken from us. But any of the other things can be taken from us. So that's the I and mine message. Because even, so supposing you're a pure devotee. Supposing Maharaj Yudhisthira is a pure devotee. Does he possess nothing? Well, he's the emperor who has all this opulence. But as far as he is concerned, it's not his. So that's the sense everything belongs to Krishna, so there's nothing to renounce. But then there's that decision to acknowledge that it belongs to Krishna, or it doesn't belong to Krishna. Or then, you know, the body and the upkeep of the body. So one can become like, you know, the false renouncer that parches the elements of the body according to the language of Bhagavad Gita. That's austerity in the mode of ignorance. In the attempt to give it up. So it's not ours, but it's Krishna's. And so we have that relationship with this body. We're inhabiting the body and it's Krishna's property. We'll take care of it. That's something. You get the distinction. Where we direct our free will is going to determine the false sense of proprietorship or the proper sense of servitorship within the kingdom of God. Anything else? Yes.
During the start of the class, you mentioned Krishna is your protector and you need to see that all the time.
Hmm.
When there is distress in one's life, how do you continue doing that? Because your vision is so obstructed by everything around you. And how do you make sure that, like, you know, how the calamities fell on Queen Kunti, at the time Krishna was in front of him, sometimes, how do you connect?
Many things can be said about this. I'll say some now, we'll say some more on the Festival of the Holy Name, because that's one of the topics, specifically. So, you know, the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sharanagati and its message of taking shelter. Sharanagati. Sharana is shelter. Taking shelter, the path of shelter. Agati. So we're here, we're not at that position of shelter. Your question is how do we, when faced with the vipadas, the calamities, how do we stay in that position of shelter taking? Jiva Goswami says, of the, there's six limbs of surrender. Of one amongst them is the angi, and the other the angas. One is the primary, and the other is the secondary. And the primary one is Goptritve Varanam, which means, Krishna, you are my master. So not departing from that position is where to start. And if you leave the position of master, even little, you're in the default position of, I'm meant to be the enjoyer. And this situation is interfering with my plan for enjoyment. I'll say it this way. Again, I may say it again over the weekend. On this verse, Prabhupada speaks about his life. And he says it in this way. According to my astrological chart, it was told that I was destined to become one of the most wealthy people in the world. But circumstances changed, and I lost everything. And I was thinking, why is this happening? So it was a calamity. But he didn't depart from the position of Krishna as my master. And now he's saying, and he went on in some classes describing this, that, you know, I didn't understand that my life was upside down or whatever the language. But Krishna had a plan. And now I have so much more wealth than I could have had if I had continued becoming a wealthy man. But it's all for Krishna. So when we're going through the calamity, we don't understand what's on the other side of the calamity. What's Krishna's plan? But we never depart from that position of being Krishna's servant. Goptritve Varanam. Same idea is in Brahma's prayers. You know that Tatte Nukampam verse. 10:14:8. You can look it up later. It's quoted in Bhagavad Gita. In Brahma's case, he knew he did something bad. He stole the calves, stole the cowherd boys. He was challenging Krishna's power with his power. He was due to get a reaction. So the position that he took was, I accept the reaction. I'm not going to try to counteract or neutralize the reaction. I'll just accept the reaction. But one thing is, I'll not let my mind budge one inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Goptritve Varanam. He is my master. He can do with me what he wants. But I'm going, one thing, I'm going to stay at his lotus feet. And by so doing, I know that I will inherit the property of my father if the son outlives the father. Yes, you just live and you inherit the property of the father by law in India. And if the property of the father, his father is Lord Vishnu, he'll go back to Godhead just by staying fixed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So from that, that's the angi, and then the other angas. Then we go on accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable, and so forth and so on. It's a core message. I'm thinking of a person who's not here, and they're going through a big tribulation. Why? You know, the same questions we all ask when we're going through some. What's on the other side of this? Who can say? But that, you know, the advice I'm giving this person is just be very clear who you are, what your purpose of life is, and take shelter of Krishna. And however long the tribulation lasts, who can say? What's on the other side of this? Who can say? But don't deviate from that position. Krishna's kindness will be there. Krishna will see that. And the ultimate protection, just like the Pandavas, it wasn't just one thing, it was thing after thing after thing after thing after thing. But always Krishna was there. even in this circumstance, Krishna is leaving. And he leaves. Yudhisthira comes out after she offers her prayers and he says, please stay a while. So he stays a while. Another week, 2 weeks, and then goes. But he goes. So it looks like, oh, Krishna's being not kind. He's going. But his kindness is always there. That's his nature. Particularly in reciprocation with his devotee. So the question that is being put to us by Krishna, so to speak, is where is your devotion for me? Is it you want circumstances or things and happiness is in that? Or happiness is in your relation with me. So he doesn't have to do it this way or that way or some other way. Jiva Goswami remarks that in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, the potency of the Supreme Lord was exhibited such that even Hiranyakashipu couldn't harm him at all. Most powerful person tried his best to kill his son, and he couldn't. And then in contrast, there's Maharaj Parikshit, who died in a burst of flames. So he says that a devotee may or may not exhibit their greatness. Their greatness is their firm shelter in the personality of Godhead. So in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, he just went back to Godhead, fixed his mind on the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna. So why didn't the Lord protect him? Then you go to those other, you know, why did Abhimanyu get killed the way that he got killed, and the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and that's in these prayers. You know, these are great devotees, why did these horrible things happen? Kunti says, I don't understand you. It's perplexing. But she didn't deviate from the position of her faithfulness in Krishna. So some other explanation or some other purpose of Krishna being fulfilled. Who can say? So your question was, how do you stay fixed? And it's in the primary faithfulness of the reality of Krishna and the nature of Krishna. Krishna exists and Krishna is kind. There's a higher reality, and that higher reality is a supreme person. He's very kind. Even when I get turned upside down and get shaken, Krishna is very kind. And once again, it's the nature of the place. In the case of the Pandavas, it's not that there was some sinful activity or impious activity and they're reaping the fruit of that. It's Krishna directly. In our case, it could be any number of things. Something back there is bringing up this calamity here. Or it's just, the message is, this isn't a place that we belong. And then we could say, yeah, but, and Krishna says, no, yeah, but, it's just a place where we don't belong. And no, it's a hard lesson to learn in some cases. More on this when we do our festival of the Holy Name, because it's a part of the Angas of Sharanagati. Anything else? No? No. Okay. Yes. Here's the microphone.
I don't know if this is a question, such it's not a question, but in the purport that we read from, the statement was made, duty of sane person is to be undisturbed by calamities. I found it very interesting that it says it's a duty to be undisturbed.
Yeah.
It reminded me in one of our Bhakti-Shastri classes, we learned that in the Patanjali Yoga system, there is a niyama that you should be satisfied. So a niyama is like, It's just be satisfied. It's just something you do.
Yeah.
So it sounded like...
I like it. I like it. It's nice.
Is this the same? Like, it's the duty to be undisturbed by a calamity?
Well...
hard to do, right? I mean, I don't...
Yamas and niyamas are there, the do's and the don'ts. So you could say, you know, be satisfied or don't be disturbed. It's just, it's a principle to live by. That's one way to look at niyamas. A principle to live your life by. And that's what duties are also. So let's say, you know, be truthful. Don't tell a lie. Yama and niyama. So it's just a principle to live by. There may be inclined to be crooked. It doesn't suit my interest to tell the truth, so they'll speak something that's not truthful. A little one. Not a big one, a little one. But you make that compromise and the little one becomes medium, becomes big. It just becomes a habit of not telling the truth. That's Kali Yuga, it progresses. So it's a duty to be truthful, it's a duty to be satisfied. And so it's principle to live by. Whatever comes by Krishna's arrangement, you'll be satisfied with that. Whether it's good fortune, ill fortune, just, you know, something. It doesn't mean we don't make any, we make practical endeavors. Practical endeavors for something. But we don't become dissatisfied if that practical endeavor doesn't produce 2x instead of x. It's a duty to be satisfied, whatever comes by its own accord, according to our karma and the circumstances of life. Okay. You have something? Yeah?
Yes. You mentioned in the beginning, in this material world, we don't need to pray for...
In this material world, what?
We don't need to ask for the calamities. They will come. They are here every time.
Yeah, it's the nature of the place.
My question is like, if we are going through some calamities, and as Kunti is saying that whenever there is calamities, you are here for me to save us. Then my question is like, we are going through the calamities. Do we need to?
The battery is weak. Can we do something? Maybe you can just speak loud and, huh? It's okay now. Try again.
Do we need to pray Krishna and
sure.
Do nothing or?
Sure. That's okay. You can pray to Krishna to relieve you of the calamity, that's okay. Better is, Krishna, you can do with me whatever you like. And then Kunti says, bring the calamities. So there's different options, but if you approach Krishna, you know, the Bhagavatam verse says, akama sarvakamova mokshakama Udharadi, those who are intelligent. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. You should engage in tivra bhakti. Strong devotion. Tivra bhakti. So, it's, if your heart says, Krishna, I'm too disturbed. This calamity is overwhelming me. Krishna, please help me. So that's, you take shelter of Krishna. Then there's other positions to take also. Did that address your question? Not exactly.
We will pray to Krishna and we need to wait for the result or we just...
Well, you certainly have to wait for the result.
But,
and the result may or may not come the way that you're expecting the result to come, too. Our position is the service department. Krishna's position is the results department. We let Krishna do his business and we'll do our business. We'll do the service and he'll take charge of the results. And in his own way, in his own time, that's Krishna. Now he knows what our expectations are and our needs are and our wants are. And he may or may not. He's not an order supplier. You know, hurry up. We don't do that. We say Hare Krishna, not Hare Krishna. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oh, you have something. You have something. Back up here. Microphone. Last question. You have the honor of the last question. Because you elevated seat up there.
Practical scenario. Right?
Practical scenario. Life.
If somebody shoots with a gun, yes, his or her kid, he or she take that as a bench or a mercy or a calamity.
It's a calamity. It's a calamity. But Kunti sees calamities. You know, the list that we heard in the previous verses, the poison cake, the house of lack, the Rakshasa Hedimba, and the whole list. The vicious warriors and the battlefield. There's calamities. But along with the calamity came Krishna's protection again and again and again. So it's calamities. So if someone, as you're using your example, someone does something awful like that, it's a calamity. Now, how do we respond to the calamity? That wasn't your question. You're asking, is it a calamity or not? It's a calamity. So how do we address ourselves to the calamity? We take shelter of Krishna, which was what Rajabhakti was asking. How do you handle that situation? How do you get to the position when you're fixed in shelter in Krishna? We have to cultivate that. We cultivate that by the activities of bhakti in when it's non-calamity time. You know, just ordinary life. And then comes, you know, this extreme, and then comes that extreme. Could be the extreme of great fortune, could be the extreme of ill fortune. There's ill fortune, bad fortune. Now how do you address yourself to that? Starting with, you take shelter of Krishna. He's the master. And this is being sanctioned for me. I don't know why. It could be the other way. Why another person was the recipient of the gunshot instead of me, or whatever. Who can say? So it's a calamity whether it's you or the other person. Now how do you address yourself to that? So it starts with the message of Kunti, so there's so many things, but it can be said, but the message of Kunti is you start with, Krishna is very kind. I like very much the pastime of Sudama, who came to visit Krishna in Dwarka. You know that one? When Krishna was a little boy, after he rescued Vasudeva and Devaki from Kamsa's prison, they wanted to send him to school. He hadn't been to school, he was 12 years old, he hadn't even gone to school yet. So they sent him to the best school, Sandipani Muni School. And he had as a class friend a Brahmin boy. He was from a Kshatriya family, so a Brahmin boy and a Kshatriya boy in school together. His name was Sudama. And in that time spent together in Sudama's school, they became fantastic friends. Of course, Sudama was a devotee and Krishna was the Lord. But friends, Dasya, which could be Sakya Rasa, friendship. They grew up. Krishna moved to Dwarka, 16,000 palaces. Sudama was poor, living in a town not far from Dwarka. At the insistence of his wife, he went to see Krishna. You know the story? It's in the Bhagavatam, in Krishna book. So he went to see Krishna, and when he went to see Krishna, he was supposed to bear a gift to go see Krishna. But he was so poor. All he had was a little cloth with some broken rice. And when he came before Krishna, he hid the broken rice behind his back. Krishna said, "What do you got there?" He snatched it from his hand and started eating the rice. Rukmini checked his hand. Some say because it was not fit for him. Others say it's because how are you going to repay him? It's not the value of the rice, it's the love with which he is offered. So he spent the night, they talked so many things, then he started walking back to his home. And he was thinking, Krishna is very kind. Krishna knew why I came, and he didn't ask me. Because if he asked me, I'm a Brahmin, I'd have to tell him. And he then, Krishna, would give me all kinds of nice things. You know, I'm very poor, please help me. My wife is concerned. So we were given all nice things, and I would have gotten proud. Oh, I'm Krishna's favorite. I got all these nice things from Krishna. He knew I would become proud. So Krishna didn't even ask me why I came. Krishna is very kind. Krishna is very kind. All the way home, he's thinking, Krishna is very kind. When he got to his home, he couldn't find his home. Instead, he saw a big palace. He called for his wife, and this woman came out. He didn't even recognize his wife. She was dressed luxuriously with nice ornaments and garments, and, "I'm your wife." And this is, you know, I thought you asked Krishna for, you know, relief from the difficulty, and he produced all this. So Sudama was thinking, Krishna is very kind. So have or have not, or have not or have, Krishna is very kind. This or that, this feature of duality, that feature, good fortune, ill fortune, Krishna is very kind. That's how to stay in that position, is recognizing the nature of the person who is our shelter, the master. He's kind. Misfortune may come. Calamity may come. Like the example you gave. Now how are we going to address ourselves to Krishna is going to tell us how we're going to address ourselves to the calamity. Of course. Maharaj Yudhisthira saw it as a calamity. But Krishna wanted it. And the reason he wanted it was he was going to depart, and he came into this world to remove demoniac kings so that peace could be prevail. So he gathered all the demoniac kings together and had them finished. It's a calamity. And good fortune at the same time. For the world, for the spiritual well-being of the world. It was a calamity. War is always a calamity. But it may, you know, in some cases, rare case, this is a rare case, where it's designed by the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, it's sanctioned by the Supreme Lord, not designed by him. This was designed by him. He showed Arjuna in the universal form. The purpose of that was to relieve the earth of the demoniac kings for which Mother Earth had come to him.
My last question.
Yeah, okay.
How would I know if somebody shoots somebody's kid? Is that by design or is that by accident?
Well, it's certainly not by design. It's sanctioned. Nothing, not even a blade of grass can move without the sanction of the Supreme. But that's not, his design is come back to me. And we're saying no. So then we're involved in the modes of nature and karma. And according to the modes of nature and karma, calamities happen. Not by design. By our misuse of free will. We're saying no. So say, ask your question in a different way. If it's karmically destined for something like this to happen, not by design, but just karmic destiny, is there a way to avoid that? The answer is yes. What's that? By taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, all karmic bondage is relieved. Doesn't Krishna say that? Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami masuchaha. Your karma can be completely changed. Some calamity was supposed to come to you and it didn't happen. How did it not happen? You changed your karma. How'd you do that? Took shelter of transcendence and karma changes. Just gets burned. Okay.
Same as
Kunti
said, right?
Huh? Yes, exactly. Same message. Okay, gee whiz, it's after 9 o'clock. Thank you very much, Prabhupada ki jai.